Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
Welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig, Corey LaBounty, and Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. Corey, how are you, man?
Dalt, it's great to see. I mean, I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be back in the studio with you and Ian this evening. And, you know, couldn't ask for a better Monday night. Welcome everybody to Mobile, Alabama, who's able to come in for the Senior Bowl, whether you're a player, whether you're a reporter. A little bit different, but, Dalt, I'm excited to be back.
They're here.
They
have arrived. The workouts started today. Not practices. That doesn't start until tomorrow, and they'll practice at Hancock Whitney. And, well, I imagine they'll utilize all the practice facilities on the South Alabama campus, but that starts tomorrow through Thursday. And then Friday we would normally have meet the players. We would have Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, what he started last year, the Players Mardi Gras Parade, and then that would all lead into the Senior Bowl this coming Saturday. Unfortunately, no fan events this year. We don't need to go into – I would hope at this point we don't need to go into detail why that's not happening. We all know why that's not happening. But I'm just glad that they've been able to get this far and get the players here and have the practices this week and play the games. So we'll be talking a lot about the Senior Bowl in tonight's show. Ian, how you doing tonight?
Well, you know, fellas, as Corey likes to say, too blessed to be stressed. I'm out here and I'm grinding and I'm thriving.
All right. I like to hear that, and I snuck that on you. You weren't ready with the microphone. You got to be ready, Ian.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
Tough Friday. And Corey, we've talked about this a little bit over the weekend, but Mobile's own Hank Aaron, Hammerin' Hank, passed away Friday, the age of 86, died in his sleep, a Mobile-born guy. Of course, Hank Aaron Stadium named after him. He went on to a very, very, very one of the most successful Major League Baseball careers of all time. Of course, he broke the home run record of Babe Ruth's back in, I think, 1974 or somewhere there in the mid-70s. That record was at 755 for the longest time. And Hank still holds a bunch of records, a bunch of Major League records for RBIs, total bases, extra base hits, and he's third all-time in hits alone, third in games played, and fourth in runs scored. And we're talking about someone who hasn't seen the diamond as a player in well over three decades, still holds all those records. Just an amazing athlete, but more than that, an amazing person. And a just as far as civil rights go, one of the people who really, really, really advanced civil rights. I didn't realize, and it's my bad. I'll say it freely and admittedly. I didn't realize – I knew early on in Hank Aaron's career, and especially growing up in a segregated neighborhood like he did, I knew that race played a huge part in his life. But in the 70s, still going through it, and that there were threats on his life, threats on his family life. I read this tweet from over the weekend, and I can't remember which newspaper it was back in the 70s. It might have been the New York Times. Might have been – I think it was the Times, and the editor – then said that they had gotten so many letters from people that were angry, racially motivated anger, that Hank Aaron was going to pass Babe Ruth for the home run record, that they actually wrote his obituary because they were worried he was going to be assassinated. Now, I wasn't in that editor's shoes. I don't know if the threat really rose to that level, but even Hank Aaron said that there were threats put on his life just because he was such a great athlete, he was about to do away with Babe Ruth's record. But I can't even begin to myself think what he means to so many Mobilians, other than that I know he was an incredible athlete, and I'm glad to say that he's from right here in Mobile.
And that's the thing, Dalton. When you start talking about Tomoville and the community that surrounds Tomoville, I know I'm a LaFleur High School graduate, and right around the corner there is where they took his childhood home and transported it to where it currently sits at Hank Aaron Stadium right off of Highway 90. And when you start talking about the pride that that community had and continues to have associating his name with the Tomoville community, it just bleeds over, Dalton. And when you start talking about Mobile, Alabama, and the legacy of baseball players, yes, Hank Aaron is ultimately the king of swing, and he will always be one of Mobile's finest and definitely the finest baseball player to ever come out of this area. But I get happy to see Hank Aaron's name associated with where he's born from. Hank Aaron from Mobile, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And then to see the tributes that came in, to have a stadium named after him in 98, to be able to share that with his wife, his mom, his dad. After he breaks the record, they asked him, well, what did you keep? What memorabilia do you still have? He said he cannot remember. He just remembers going home with his wife and praying and thanking God that he did not get assassinated or killed during that moment.
Yeah.
That historical moment in baseball history, and he just did it in a dignified and classy position. And I think the biggest compliment to him is when Muhammad Ali, considered the greatest athlete of all time or the most recognized athlete of all time globally, when he said, who do you look up to? He says, I look up to Hank Aaron.
Wow.
And that is what speaks volumes about what Hank Aaron meant to the sporting world.
Well, rest in peace, Hank Aaron. They did say, you know, he got the COVID vaccine on January 5th. He wanted to be an example that it was a safe thing to take. And we kind of talked about that on the morning show this morning, wondering, you know, and because it's already out there. There are mm-hmm. people saying, well, did that play a part in the death of Hank Aaron? And reports came out this evening. They said they do not believe that the COVID vaccine, I mean, he was 86 years
sure.
old, right? So, but there were all kinds of celebrations of Hank Aaron's life over the weekend. And I know they have the funeral arrangements out now. He will be, there will at least be a service in Atlanta. I'm not sure if they've decided that that's where he will be buried, but there will be a service for Hank Aaron in Atlanta this week. But MLB Network, I went right to that on Saturday, and they were playing all kinds of some of the older documentaries mm-hmm. of Hank Aaron and some of his older games. But he will be missed. And what was great about Hank Aaron after his professional career ended is he was still accessible. You could still hear yes. interviews with him. And, of course, the Atlanta Braves organization kept him around and talked to him often. He kept an office there at the stadium. So Hank Aaron will certainly be missed, not just here in Mobile, his hometown, but across all athletics.
And when you start talking about having a stadium named after you, having a park there in Tomoville named after him, I think it's only fitting that there continue to be a statue made in his honor that will go ahead and be somewhere here close in Mobile, Alabama. So all Mobilians and people across the country can continue to pay tribute to him, because when he dies, they go to his home, and formerly the Bay Bears, that organization allowed no charge to come in to visit his childhood home, to where they had people from all across the country coming in these last couple of days to come in. And then the Senior Bowl, paying tribute to him
yeah.
with the decal on the helmets of and taking a moment of silence. I think that it speaks kudos to Jim Nagy and him realizing the influence that Hank Aaron not only made to Mobile, but across this world globally also. So I think there are so many things that we can continue to do to honor Hank Aaron, but he's definitely will never be forgotten.
Yeah, and he was such a big name in Atlanta that the Falcons even retired the number 44. I mean, it was 44 for Hank Aaron, and I think the Hawks might have too. I need to look into that, but I know for sure the Falcons did, so he'll definitely be missed. Well, we had some great football to watch yesterday, and the GOAT, I mean, what can you say? Tom Brady does it again. I was just thinking about this earlier. Just try to, you know, step back for a second and think. This will be Super Bowl 55 coming up. This will be Tom Brady's 10th Super Bowl. I'm not very good with statistics, so let's go ahead and knock 55 down to 50. He's played in just about 10%. No, 10 into he's 10, played just about 20%.
Over 18, almost 18%.
Yeah.
That's 18%, 2 out of 11.
That is absolutely ridiculous.
It's absurd, Dalton, and I know we'll talk about it in the next segment moving forward about analytics and what we think about numbers.
That's
and
why
numbers
we have
not
our
lying.
We have our analytics guru in here,
no
Ian.
No question.
He's going to break down LaFleur's decision making.
And it's just amazing, though, that Tom Brady, you know, they say don't bet against Brady, bet mm-hmm. on Brady.
Yep.
And I think he showed it this season as to why, if you don't want him to be the MVP, that's fine. But what he was able to accomplish and what he continues to accomplish is amazing.
Well, these two teams that'll be squaring off for Super Bowl 55, since their bye weeks, they're 14-1 combined. The one loss was the Buccaneers to the Chiefs by 3 points earlier this year. So we're in for a heck of a Super Bowl. Super Bowl 55, Tampa Bay will be the first team ever to play at home. And we'll break down those conference championships when we get back. And look at that, the Alabama Crimson Tide in the top 10 of the top 25 rankings. More on that coming up. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. And what a weekend in football. It's so bittersweet this time of year because college football, other than the Senior Bowl, it's over with. It's done with. And we do love the Senior Bowl being
there's
down
hope,
here.
Though, Dalton. Your FCS schools will soon to start here in March and April.
Oh, well, I cannot wait for that season.
So we'll get a little bit more football and not the end of.
That is going to be such bad football.
I don't think it's going to be great. You know, they're trying to stay in shape now, but you at least you get a chance to see Deion Sanders on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we get a couple of other schools that will be coming to Mobile for the Gulf Coast Challenge. So I'm excited about that there's still football. But you're right. It's not FBS football for sure.
Right, right. Well, I shouldn't hate because I'm going to watch it if it's on TV.
Me too.
I mean, I watched the XFL. I watched the AAF. I will be watching FCS football when it comes on. But you get what I mean. It's a bittersweet time of year because the football is as good as ever. There's just so few games to watch. And Saturday, of course, there was no football on my TV. Sunday, we had our open house at 2 o'clock. You better bet that I was there before the open house so that I could get in and get out and get back to watch the Packers play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And at some point, now I'm a Tennessee Titans fan. I would absolutely love it if Mike Vrabel or John Robinson happened to be listening right now. I know they're not, but I'm a huge Tennessee Titans fan. I mean, when I was 18, I got a Titans tattoo. That's how big of a Titans fan I am.
Yes, you are.
I might sometimes regret getting that too, but tattoo, but it's with me now. It's part of my life. So at some point, when your team is knocked out, I have found that the best thing to root for, except for where you put your money, which I do that also, storylines. And so often, the best storyline wins out over the team that is supposed to win the game. And we've talked about Aaron Rodgers this year, MVP. I think he'll win the MVP this year. Had an outstanding season. Matt LaFleur, a great play caller. Devontae Adams, I mean, go down the list. The Packers were outstanding this year. They were supposed to win that game. They were at Lambeau Field. Rodgers still only has the one Super Bowl in his entire career. This year was set up for the Green Bay Packers as we got closer to the end of the year. But what was the best storyline? The best storyline was Tom Brady coming out of New England, going down to Tampa Bay, bringing Gronk back into the mix. You got Bruce Arians there. He brings in Antonio Brown. You got a couple studs and Mike Evans and Godwin. Cameron Brait. I mean, at this point, I'm just naming players. But I even like what they did on the defensive side of the ball. They bring in Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh and Shaq Barrett. Those two got Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh, I think if you'd asked me 2 or 3 years ago, I would have told you they were washed. They both came up huge for that team yesterday. So, of course, I think the Tampa Bay defense was the one of the top reasons they won that game. But to me, it's about the storyline and Tom Brady making it to his 10th Super Bowl, looking for his 7th Super Bowl win, 1 year removed from leaving the New England Patriots. This is one of those where you look back, like so many New England Patriots championships in the past, and you say, why did I ever think anything else would happen? This was going to happen. Tom Brady was going to find a way to get into the Super Bowl, and now he has a chance to win that Super Bowl. And then what would be the best storyline coming out of the AFC to match that storyline from the NFC? It would be the best quarterback in football one of the youngest quarterbacks in football, Patrick Mahomes, and the Kansas City Chiefs, this juggernaut, playing in the Super Bowl against the greatest of all time, and that's exactly what we have set up for next Sunday night.
Tampa Bay 11-5 overall record, Dalton, making themselves at home in Tampa Bay for the Super Bowl. Now, again, we were talking off the air, people who bet against Brady now really want to bet on Brady because you just lose too much money betting against him, whether you like him or don't like him, whether Deflategate or whatever. But the biggest question was it Bill Belichick or was it Tom Brady? Mm-hmm. Who was winning for the New England Patriots? And some people said, well, it's a combination of both, and one can't live without the other, one can't thrive without the other. Well, it's obvious the Patriots struggled this year, whether it was Tom Brady-less or whether it was due to COVID-19 opt-outs.
I think that was a huge part of it.
And we'll take into effect, though, at the same time, Tom Brady knew that, hey, if I had to choose a team I wanted to go to, Tom Brady chose Tampa Bay. It's not like Tampa Bay said, oh, come on over here. No, he went to Tampa Bay because they're ready to win now.
He had his pick of the litter.
And he did have his pick of the litter, and I didn't think he would choose Tampa Bay. And because he did, I know a lot of Buccaneers fans rejoice behind it. They're going to the Super Bowl, but to me they're going to the Super Bowl because of analytics and because of the decisions that certain players and coaches did not make for the Green Bay Packers, because there's no way in football, rule 101 is when there's a Hail Mary situation, you don't let anything get behind you.
Right.
You just don't. And I don't care what you thought, who had help over the top, there was one-on-one coverage there, and that cannot happen in that situation, dog.
Well, let's talk about those two plays. The two plays that swung the game. We don't even have to get into the penalty call at the end, because that just is so annoying to me, and I've seen so many Saints fans do that over these last few years. Now, I love the Saints. I root for them most of the time, but at some point when it gets personal between you and the refs and you feel like they're coming after you, it's in fighting, they say don't leave it up to the judges. It's the same in football. If you're depending on a referee to bail you out at the end of the game because they hadn't called that play the rest of the game, well then, that's on you. That's on your team. You should have been in a better position to win. So let's talk about the two biggest plays that they could have controlled. And what you're talking about right there, at the end of the first half, you have Tampa up 14-10. And things had kind of slowed down because at the beginning of the game, it was like touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. And Brady's moving down the field, very little time left. It looks like they're just on the edge of field goal position. I think what they were sitting at about the 40-yard line, and I definitely thought that they were just going to play field position, try to get a little bit closer for a suck-up field goal. And I think that Green Bay was thinking the same thing, but they didn't want to give up even 3 points. So they didn't play for the long ball, and that's where the greatness of Tom Brady shone through. I wonder if you took every single starting quarterback in the league right now and put them in that position, in that one play, like Madden Moments style, where you're playing that one play in the game, how many quarterbacks would have seen that and also had the stones to make that throw when you were likely going to run out of time if it went incomplete? Tom Brady is in a class of his own. Aaron Rodgers might have done that, and Mahomes maybe. Mm-hmm. I think that's basically it, those three. And Brady saw it. He went for it. King was not ready for it, and they score a touchdown. We've talked about how important the final 4 minutes of the first half are and the first 4 minutes of the second half. There's a great book out by a former NFL GM, Michael Lombardi, where he talks about the middle eight, and the teams that are so successful in football are great at using that middle eight to their advantage. Nick Saban is stellar at it. Bill Belichick is amazing at it. Tom Brady, we should basically be talking about him like he's a head coach in the NFL, because he is also great at that. And that's really what swung the game. That touchdown, and then they come out, they get the ball to start the third quarter, another touchdown, and you go from a 14-10 lead where Aaron Rodgers still has the run game in his back pocket. He can still run it with Aaron Jones as much as he wants. And then they're down 28-10, and it's wide open from there on out.
The whole dynamics of the game change when you make it 28-10. But here's a bigger stat, Dalt, that three turnovers by the Packers that they were able to create on Tom Brady, only produced 6 points.
Yep.
And because you're not able to produce more points, the Packers had every opportunity, especially there in the fourth quarter when they turned Tom Brady over twice. The offensive line let Aaron Rodgers down and got him sacked a couple of times to where they had to rely on J.K. Scott to try to flip the field. But when you start talking about the head coach's decision, LaFleur making the decision there, to me, to chase points early in the game, even though it hit the receiver in the hands in the end zone for the two-point conversion, at that point in time, to me, you still only kick the extra point. You chase points later in the game like they did not do. They went ahead, kicked the field goal instead of going for it on fourth down, which Aaron Rodgers today said it wasn't in my play call, wasn't in my hands. But that's a tough situation. If you're a Packers fan, if you're a Tampa Bay fan, you're saying thank you very much for keeping probably the second best quarterback in the NFL on the sidelines and kicking an extra point. I don't care if you had 10 timeouts.
Now, that failed two-point conversion earlier in the game that you're talking about, that's where Ndamukong Suh, he got his hands on that ball. And was it Lazard that ended up dropping the ball? Just because it was off, I mean, it turned the rotation of the ball, and that was enough to knock him off course. But at the end of the game, the most talked about play in this game, and I think that LaFleur will have a really long, nice career in the NFL. You got to remember, this is his second season as a head coach.
Second championship.
He got outcoached in that game yesterday. And Aaron Rodgers' comments after the game kind of seemed like Aaron Rodgers' comments after many games where it's like, well, you know, this one isn't really on me. And Aaron Rodgers played really, really good ball yesterday. But that call towards the end of the game where they go field goal instead of trying to score the touchdown and get the two-point conversion, analytics actually backed that up. I was surprised. They showed some percentages there, and he got a better percentage of winning by kicking the field goal rather than going for the touchdown. But you have to remember, who is the quarterback on the other side of the field? And all he needed were a couple first downs. So he was making a bet there that he was going to keep Tom Brady from gaining over 10 yards, and that just seems like the worst bet you could possibly
make. That's why I hate analytics to this day. Go with your gut feeling as a coach. Don't rely on those type of numbers. I mean, do it the old school way, to where I know there's analytical coaches now, but just go ahead. You have Aaron Rodgers, just like Tom Brady. Go with your gut and go with the best that got you there.
Amen. All right. We'll be back. More Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5 on the way.
Stiff upper lip. Lock it down.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. And getting your texts. We'll take your calls to 251-343-0106. And Greg says, been a Hank fan all my life. Long live the Hank. I got to meet him a few times. Once on Rabbit Creek by his house. And another time back in 88 at a baseball game at Stanky Field. He said he got an autographed ball from Hank, and he will definitely be missed. And so many Mobilians have those stories of meeting Hank Aaron and getting an autograph ball or hearing some stories from him, so that's outstanding. And I'm glad that you got that experience, Greg. And he also said it's fun to live in a time when Tom Brady's doing what he's doing. I don't think we'll ever see anything like this. I don't either. And this is one of those moments where you should – I know there's a lot of Brady haters out there, especially in this region of the United States, and maybe I'm a reformed Brady hater. I don't think I ever hated him,
right?
But there was definitely a time where I was like, yeah, he needs to not win any more Super Bowls. I'd be okay with that. But at this point, it's like, what else can he do? Because, Corey, you and I have talked – we even talked about the possibility last week of Brady, after leaving New England, you know, he makes it into the playoffs. Of course, they beat Washington, maybe – Washington normally wouldn't be a playoff team like they were this year. But to go from that, beating Drew Brees on the road, then beating Aaron Rodgers on the road, and not just on the road, but we're talking about the Superdome and then at Lambeau Field. I know that it wasn't a packed crowd, but the sentiment stands. He went and beat Drew Brees on the road, went and beat Aaron Rodgers on the road. What better capper to that than to face off against the best quarterback in the NFL right now, Patrick Mahomes? What is he, 24 years old? It's just an amazing storyline. This is what movies have been written about.
You know, one of my coworkers was talking about, well, why isn't Tom Brady the highest paid quarterback in the NFL? I said, well, because he's 43 years old. And because if he decides to play another year, he'll be 44 years old in the NFL. Now, wouldn't it be the ultimate Hollywood script for Tom Brady to go ahead, win it in Tampa Bay, win the Super Bowl, his seventh, and just retire? Because that's where you leave on top. Now, whether he does win it or does not win it, let's look and say he does lose the Super Bowl. This is his 10th appearance. So do the math there to where if he loses it, he already has 6 rings.
Yeah.
So he'll be 6-4 if he loses this Super Bowl. If he doesn't, he'll be 7-3. Now let's look at the Super Bowl he did lose to the Seahawks there, to where there's an interception. So I've never really been a Brady hater.
Mm-hmm.
I respect that he is the GOAT because I loved Joe Montana. But when you start talking about living in an era to where you actually get a chance to see the GOATs,
yeah,
you have to absolutely love it. And, again, it's just so hard to bet against Tom Brady at this point in time with everything he's accomplished.
And that's why – now, don't take betting advice from me.
Or me either.
Certainly don't take betting advice from me. I shouldn't take betting advice from me. Actually, over this last week, if I had bet directly against any game that I wanted to bet on the team, this last week was my worst week in fandom of all time. As far as my team's losing games, I'm talking about the Tennessee Vols here and the implosion of the program. And yes, I see your texts. The memes are rolling in. let's see. We've got dumpster fires coming in on the text line. We've got the Hamburglar running off with a sack of money. And then we have a classy Nick Saban meme. Actually, I love the memes with that are just trashing Tennessee football. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll talk about Tennessee football. But back to the Super Bowl. The Buccaneers are going to win this game. The Buccaneers are going to win the Super Bowl. This was written in the stars, and I'd love to hear you guys tell me why the Chiefs are going to win this game. I know that the Chiefs probably have the better overall team. They've been much better over the course of the last couple of years. But this Chiefs team isn't even as good as the Chiefs team was last year. They have had some really, really close games. Now, most of them were wins this year, but they had some really close games when last year they were really blowing out some teams. And the run defense is a problem for this Kansas City Chiefs team. And we got a text earlier mentioning Leonard Fournette and how good he has looked here at the end of the year. I think when you take into account how well the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense is playing right now, the Chiefs have had some major problems on the offensive line. And an even bigger one now, Eric Fisher is out for the Super Bowl. The left tackle tore his Achilles during the AFC Championship game yesterday. So you have a backup guarding Patrick Mahomes' blind side. And if Tampa Bay comes even close to doing to that Chiefs line what they did to the Green Bay line yesterday, Mahomes running around on a hobbled ankle back there, and he's been beat up over these last couple of weeks, I don't think that Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce will be able to have the games they had yesterday against this Tampa Bay defense. And I do think Tampa Bay will be able to put up points by running the ball and using Brady's superior football intelligence to get down the field. To me, I know the Chiefs are favored by 3 points in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember what I said about the storyline earlier? Sometimes it writes itself. This is the Buccaneers championship. I might not even watch the game. I think Tampa Bay is going to win.
All right. Over-under is 56.5. So I think it'll be covering the over because, like you said, both of these defenses are giving up over 366 yards. Imagine them being looking in the mirror. The Chiefs are giving up 366 yards. The Bucs are giving up 366.3 yards. So they're mirror images of each other defensively. I think the key to this game will come down to turnovers and being able to get points off of those turnovers. Mahomes, he likes to be the magic moneymaker. He tends to sometimes try to do a little bit too much. Brady, those type of throws that he made yesterday were tip ball throws, maybe one bad interception that he did throw to where there was pressure and he wished he would have thrown it out of bounds, but he didn't. He underthrew Mike Evans. I think it's going to come down to turnovers. I'm going to go again. I did not have the Buccaneers playing in the Super Bowl.
I didn't either.
Okay, I had them losing this week to the Packers. So I had the Packers and the Chiefs a rematch of Super Bowl I, which is not going to happen. Tampa Bay making history, playing at Tampa Bay in their own stadium, in their own home. not having to travel. Kansas City is going to travel to the Super Bowl the day before, which is smart due to COVID and keeping your guys pretty much inside of a bubble. But I'm going to go with the Chiefs at 14-2. You look at the last five games, the Chiefs' only loss came to the Chargers, 38-21, and that was back on January 3rd. Now, on the Bucs' last five games, they have been on an absolute tear. They've won their last five. So the Buccaneers are playing the best football right now.
And just look at their road to the playoffs. And I'm not even talking about Breeze Rodgers at this point, but the Chiefs had a considerably easier road through the playoffs. They had the bye, first off, and Tampa, they didn't have the bye, but they played Washington that first game. But Cleveland, round two for the Chiefs, and Mahomes was knocked out after halftime. Cleveland, not a great team. Cleveland would have been beaten by the Saints or the Packers this year, and I say that with pretty good confidence. Then you go the following week, and the Bills yesterday. The Bills were a really good team this year. They were the second-best team in the AFC, so I think those were the two best AFC teams that strapped them on yesterday. The Bills wouldn't have beat the Saints or the Packers yesterday either, in my opinion, and maybe the Saints, but it's a young team. Sean McDermott hasn't been the head coach there for very long. Josh Allen made some rookie mistakes. So the Chiefs haven't been exactly going up against the cream of the crop. Tampa Bay has had two incredible opponents that they've gone in and beaten relatively handily. I know that the scores were kind of close, but Tampa Bay controlled major portions of both of those games. I think they have, if you just took into account the postseason, they have the better resume right now than the Chiefs do. So,
and it does. It's going to boil down to, again, looking at the resume, yes, the Buccaneers have played better football down the stretch. And that's what it's all about. I mean, we talk about March Madness and who gets hot down the stretch and who starts playing better football. And Tom Brady was new to this team at the beginning of the year. So, okay, that Saints game, you give them a pass and they start off and they win three out of their last four out of the last five to start the season before they're dethroned again. And, again, Brady, he's been there. He's done that. He can write the book on it, share with his teammates. And I think that's going to be beneficial. But at the end of the day, Dalton, I still like for the Buccaneers to lose this Super Bowl. And the odds makers are saying it's a three-point spread.
Right.
I think, again, we'll have over 56 points. I think it will be coming close down to a close game at the end of it. I do think, like you said, off the air, Leonard Fournette will have at least 100 yards rushing or right close to it because Kansas City will struggle there. But I think that Kansas City is going to be striving for something, being back-to-back champions, being the first one since the Patriots did it a few years ago, and I just like Kansas City.
Well, we've got 13 days from now before the game is played, so we'll talk a lot more about the Super Bowl coming up. I thought it was interesting after the game, the comments from Aaron Rodgers, where he was pretty noncommittal about his future in Green Bay, and it made me pull up the internet like I have to so many times during the day and say, was his contract up this year? Is he going to be a free agent? He's not. His contract runs through 2023, but he was almost talking after the game like, I don't know if I'll be here next year. I don't think he said those exact words.
And I don't think he will. I didn't think he, you know, with everything that transpired in the offseason, and when they drafted Jordan Love in April, coming off that Senior Bowl, that is a draft pick that I didn't see the Packers going with. Nobody said, well, we need a quarterback outside of this year's draft without saying, hey, Aaron Rodgers, we want you to be the heir apparent here, or Love to be your heir apparent. Do you mind? Or we're going to consult and talk to you and kind of – it caught everyone off guard, including Packers fans who just dropped their jaws and like, okay, does that mean that this is the end of Aaron Rodgers' career in Green Bay? With that loss yesterday, I really think that he'll move on. He'll finish his career somewhere else.
Interesting. Adam Schefter rarely makes predictions. He's normally just the news provider. He made a prediction today. He put up a graphic, quarterbacks whose futures are in question. He said, my over-under of teams changing quarterbacks this offseason is 18, and I'll go with the over. Adam Schefter saying he thinks that there will be over 18 new quarterbacks in the NFL next year. He mentions Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, Stafford, Prescott, Darnold, Wentz, Goff, Garoppolo. We're in for another heck of an offseason here in the NFL.
And the Senior Bowl with the quarterbacks that are coming to it, make your mark because you may be one of them.
Unbelievable. All right, let's talk some SEC when we get back here. We got some basketball to talk about. We got some dumpster fires to talk about. Tennessee, we'll be back. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
They can't stop me from rapping, can they? Can they hop? I spit it through the wire, man. Too much stuff on my heart right now, man.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Senior Bowl week here in Mobile. Rosters have been announced, and they had workouts today. I think they did some conditioning work, some running out on the field. Tomorrow, the practices start, which if you've ever paid attention to Senior Bowl week in Mobile, we all like to talk about the game on Saturday. But as far as the futures of these young gentlemen, it's all about practice week, and I'll be tuning in each and every day to the practices. But yeah, the rosters have been announced, and one quarterback has dropped out of the Senior Bowl for this week. Kyle Trask has an ankle injury, according to Dane Brugler with The Athletic. So he is no longer on a Senior Bowl roster, which is unfortunate because we had four of the top five Heisman finalists set to play in the Senior Bowl this year. And now that number is down to three. And all three just happened to come from the same team, the Alabama Crimson Tide. And Nagy actually split them up this year, the Alabama players. Normally they're all on the South squad, and they hear huge roars of applause when they're brought out into the usually Ladd People Stadium. And a lot's different this year. There won't be as many fans, and it won't be played at Ladd. It'll be at Hancock Whitney Stadium on the South Alabama campus, and it's no longer the North squad versus the South squad. It's national team versus the American team. And you have Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers coaching the the American team. Mm-hmm. And then you have Brian Flores and the Miami Dolphins coaching the national team. So the Panthers squad will have most of the Alabama players. They'll have Mac Jones on their team. Also, they will have the rest of the linemen, Auburn linebacker K.J. Britt, South Alabama linebacker Riley Cole, and Florida's Kadarius Toney will all be on the American team. I'm getting them confused now. Yeah, they'll be on the American team. Now, it's interesting what they did with Najee and with Devontae. Of course, Najee Harris and Devontae Smith, they will be playing on the national team under the Miami Dolphins. So you're wondering, well, why'd they split them up from their teammates? It's all about drafting, baby, and that's because the Miami Dolphins choose third, and I think they have, what, the 18th or the 26th mm-hmm. pick? Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one in the first round. And those just happen to be right around the area where Devontae Smith and Najee Harris are expected to be chosen. So they are basically interviewing with the team that is likely to select them in the first round of this year's draft. Now, Devontae Smith has that dislocated thumb from the national championship game. They said that he won't be practicing. I'm wondering if there won't be a surprise this week if he's able to get out and work out at all for him. Pretty certain he won't be playing in the game. But it's exciting to see such talent come down, and it seems like year after year, more and more talent comes down to Mobile.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it. I hate that it's not going to be filled to capacity, especially with Alabama coming off a national championship, because anytime Alabama and Auburn do well, the fans seem to flock a little bit more. And when you have a Heisman Trophy winner along with the school's all-time leading rusher, that's big time. But you're exactly right, Dalton, with the Dolphins picking three and then turn around and picking 18 and the Carolina Panthers picking at eight, they'll have an opportunity to go ahead and find that winner. And we've seen with John Gruden, especially coming down here 1 year ago, and even other coaches who come and find Kyle Allen from Wyoming, and you look at him being drafted Allen being drafted by the Buffalo Bills, and then Dak Prescott tweeting out how important it is from the way you wake up in the morning and walk and eat your breakfast and your demeanor. You never know who's going to be watching you and how you carry yourselves. I think that's huge for these players to want to do well, and especially knowing that the Indianapolis Combine is canceled. There's even more emphasis on what you're able to accomplish and who you're able to interact with here at the Senior Bowl, to where the draft truly starts here. Hashtag it means more. Hashtag the draft starts here.
I can't wait. And the week is here. I'm just glad that they were able to make it down and make this happen. You know, they were talking about having two Senior Bowl weeks at one point.
Yeah, we talked to Nagy earlier back then when the pandemic started back in May. He was like, maybe a two-week Senior Bowl would have taken place, but they found found a way. Congratulations to him for finding a way to get it done.
Well, you knew I'd have to bring up your Alabama Crimson Tide tonight because, dang it, they just will not lose out there. So I know the football team, I mean, they're like mainstays in the top five of the rankings every single year.
Yeah.
But the basketball team now in the top 10,
I love it.
Latest rankings out today, and they come in at number 9. First time since when they were ranked in the top 10?
1987, I would assume, just taking a lucky stab at it.
Believe it or not, 2007 was the last time that the Alabama Crimson Tide were ranked in the top 10.
In the top 10?
Yeah, I think they were up to 8 in 2007,
unless I'm missing three digits. Was that Grant first year, maybe, first or second year, or was that toward Gofford's, into Gofford's era?
You got me there. I have no idea, but I do know it's been 13 years since they've been in the top 10, and, you know, they've deserved it. They earned it this time because we were wondering, you know, what are these voters thinking? They must not be watching this Alabama team play because since the SEC play started this year, they have easily been, in my opinion, if you just take into account the last couple of months, they've been a top 10 team, no doubt, top 5 team in my mind. And they're now 8-0 in the SEC. Over the weekend, Bama beat, who'd they take care of over the weekend? Mississippi State, 81-73. Really pulled away there towards the very end of the game. Herb Jones had a heck of a game, 17 points, 7 assists. And this is actually their best start in the SEC since 1987.
There's my 87 time. And it's amazing, and it's about time. They have Kentucky Tuesday, which will be a huge matchup for them.
Blowout.
You still have to see. And, you know, Kentucky's gotten better since that blowout loss in Rupp Arena by 20 points. So I think it's hard for Alabama to try to maintain that the next few games because you beat LSU by going up by 40, which is amazing. But they have some guys that came back, John Petty, as well as Herb Jones. This team is definitely a top 10 team in the country.
You know, Bama was only favored, I think, by 2 points in that LSU game. And they went up 40 early.
Unbelievable.
That was a spanking. You know, Auburn's looking really good now, too. It's unfortunate that they're being punished this year and won't be playing for any tournaments because even though they might have kind of already worked themselves out of the NCAA tournament, if they were eligible, I'm saying, they're a dangerous tournament team with Sharif Cooper on the floor.
And they have Baylor coming up. I think there's a Big 12.
It is.
And Alabama has Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So those challenges outside of the SEC will be big for both the in-state schools. Looking forward to both of those matchups to see where the basketball programs are. And Baylor was number 2 in the country both of the polls this past couple of weeks. So Auburn really has an opportunity to try to turn the tide, so to speak, with Cooper at the point guard position and get it turned around for the Tigers.
Now, they still make a lot of youthful mistakes, but that Auburn team is dangerous when Sharif Cooper's out there. It's crazy how he changed the trajectory of this team just by his ability with the ball in his hands. All right, I saved it for the last minute intentionally. Tennessee, they've hired Danny White to be the new athletic director, who back during his days with Buffalo hired Nate Oates, the now Alabama Crimson Tide coach. He also hired I don't know if he was there for the hiring of Scott Frost. I know he hired Josh Heupel at UCF. But Danny White coming in, it's kind of been – there's some smoke screens out there, I think, for who Tennessee will end up hiring. The biggest name and most association I've seen with the school has been Tony Elliott out of Clemson. Now, he turned down a couple of NFL offerings, the offensive coordinator position at Tennessee and in Miami. Will he take the top job in Knoxville if it's offered? I have to think that he would. But there's also talk of possibly James Franklin and maybe Sonny Dykes out of SMU. So I think we'll know by next Monday night who the Tennessee Vols' next head coach will be.
Looking forward to that. I know being a Tennessee Vol fan, you do as well.
Yeah, and being a Tennessee Vols fan, I have zero optimism right now.
It'll get better, dog.
They're going to have to win before they gain my trust back. I'll still watch every game, but
right.
I'm spent. All right, that does it. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Stay tuned. Sweet Home Canabama on the way. Okay.